You're listening to WCOM-FM, LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 on the dial, and live streaming from WCOMFM.org. Hello and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. Here's a reminder that the comments, views, and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of WCOM, its board, and its underwriters. My topic today is talking about 10 elements of a successful business. Now, while every business has elements that are unique to it, every successful business shares some common characteristics that are consistent regardless of size, regardless of industry, regardless of business stage. And I want to talk about those elements today. And the first one I want to talk about is a clear business concept. What is it the business does? What business are you in? Who is the customer? The more concise, the more precise, the more well-developed your concept for your idea, your product, your service, your technology, the more efficient, the more effective you are going to be in using your resources and reaching your market to reach that target prospect, that target customer who is not only willing but able to buy your product. So taking the time, whether you're in getting ready to start a business or you're in business and you're struggling, or you went into business with a clear concept and you found that it just didn't match, you're just not getting the traction you need with customers, or you're not making the sales, clarify that core business message is critical to your success. And when I say a core business message, that's understanding your concept, that's focusing in on an opportunity that matches to that concept, and it's looking at the resources that you have to execute, to reach the customer, to serve the customer, and looking at that market need and that opportunity and your concept in that context. I was talking on the phone with a client who's been a client for the past several years, and he recently sold multiple businesses and he's looking around to start another business. And he called me with his projections and the financials, and he was working on his business plan. He's like, Lee, he goes, I want you to take a look at this because, you know, when I'm working at this, this is what comes out and this is my concept. And he was really struggling to articulate why this was a viable business. Well, I've talked to this one group, and if they do this, and they could be an investor, and then, well, I could go this way. And so he had sent me multiple financial models, multiple projections of how and what direction he could take the business. The problem was none of them were sustainable. None of them resonated with the marketplace as a need, as a demand, as an opportunity where the customer was going to be willing and able to make the purchase. Whether it was a matter of timing, whether it was a matter of scale, what was happening was that he was struggling to find the one market where his concept would have traction, would have opportunity, would have upside into profitability, and be able to attract investors, customers, vendors, suppliers, and build a community around it of stakeholders that everyone would be successful. And so as we were talking through his concept and the challenge, he gave me one example of a potential investor he's talking to that would also be the customer. And there just wasn't traction there. I said, well, what were the other markets? And he said, well, I haven't talked to those. Well, in your planning stage, in your pre-start, your pre-launch stage, it is the prime opportunity for you to get it right, to talk to potential customers, to look around at your competition, to see what they're doing now and see what their problem is, what is their need, and what solution are you supposed to be providing to them that matches to that need. And you look at your business concept and you look to see if your product, your service, technology is a package that you can produce, that you can deliver, that will solve that problem, that will fill that need of the customer, and that you can articulate that concept to the potential customer, to a potential investor, and say that there is a large enough market, there is a large enough demand here that we can take our skills, our abilities, our resources to craft a product, a service, a technology, a package of product, service, and technology to go to the marketplace and get them to buy at a price that includes a profit. Every business needs to think through this, whether it's in the pre-launch stage or perhaps or especially, I should say, when you're in the pre-launch phase, because it's at that point in time that you can validate, you can make the changes and stuff with less cost of investment, a less write-off of opportunity costs of things that you've already done that didn't work. When you're thinking through your business at any point, whether it's pre-launch, whether you're in startup mode and you're not getting traction, whether you've been around for 30 or 40 years and you find your business struggling to stay in business, to look for new opportunities, to get new customers, it's time to go back to that core message of your business as to what business you're in, what opportunity are you pursuing, what customer do you serve, what is your expertise in delivering a product package that could consist of a tangible product, services, and technology to solve that market need, to meet that market opportunity. You need to get in-depth market knowledge about that problem or need. The more conversations you can have with your target market, with prospective customers, with people who are out there with that problem, with that need, whether it's primary market research, whether it's secondary research, whether it's tertiary research that you're getting, as long as it's valid research that's applicable to your market that you're targeting and your capability of delivering to that market, then you need to be digging into it. You need to understand the current options for solving the problem and filling that need that are existing in the marketplace, because customers will tend to have inertia unless they're in a lot of pain and they're struggling. And by inertia means they're going to stick with the solution they have because that's the easiest thing for them to do. You need to understand who's providing current solutions and alternatives and what is actually working. You need to understand the size of the market, how many people have the issue, the demographics, the psychographics of those customers, and understand where they are, where they get their message, what do they value, what are they willing to pay for, what is the solution that they are currently buying, what do they pay for it, what benefits do they get from it, what are their expectations, and how do they value it, and why would they look for a different alternative, an alternative product, a new solution when you come into the marketplace. What benefits drive a customer's decision to make a purchase? Are you making them more money? Are you saving their money? Are you saving them time? Or are you reducing pain? Are you improving their image? What is it that problem that you're doing for them? And what benefits have they gotten from past products? And why do they still have the problem? Because obviously if they're looking for another solution, if they're even considering it, what's not working with the solutions and the tools that they're using right now to deal with their issues? And once you really become an expert in the problem, an expert in your market, an expert in the customer, an expert in the competition, then you're going to look at that market and you're going to say, here's my opportunity, here's my well-defined concept, here's the segment of that target market that I want to pursue. And so that target customer is who you create the solution for. And that's really important because you're going to take that concept, you're articulating that concept to the customer, and you're going to make a unique selling message, a unique selling positioning for your organization as to why you and why not the solution they were using, or why not any other solution they could get for their problem. And you want to be able to articulate that message. You want to be able to explain the customer to the customer. And articulating that. When I sit in meetings with startups or struggling businesses and we want to take the business to the next level, I find so many times that people cannot articulate who their customer is. You can say, yes, it's the customer that can afford to buy my product. But it's more than that, and it should be more than that. You need to understand that customer, their demand, and connect your solution to the benefits they're looking for, the problem that they're struggling with, in such a way that when they hear about your product, your service, your technology, that customer segment, an individual in that customer segment, can say, that is me, and that's what I want to buy. The more you can articulate, clarify, be concise and precise in your definition of who you're going to spend your resources and your time on to get as a customer, the more successful you're going to be. Even if the first time you target a customer segment, that's a miss, you get more information from that. And so you're going to tweak that failing fast and not getting a customer and recognizing it's because you're not articulating your message or you need to change your product offering is critical to the track of becoming a successful business. And every successful business understands that they end up packaging and repackaging their message, tweaking the message, shifting their focus, refining that focus until they find the right mix of product, price, positioning of their product, and getting that to the marketplace and into the ears and before the eyes of their customer. You have limited resources. You're not going to say no to a customer unless it's just really a bad fit. However, you're not going to target every possible customer that could walk in your door. You have to be laser focused with your marketing message, with who you're targeting and what you're conveying in that message. And the clearer you are in that business concept, the more likely you are to hit the right target customer and make a match. I work with a lot of my clients to come up with basically a 3-sentence core message that says who the customer is, says who you are, says what the problem is, and how you solve it for that customer. When they hear that, you want them to say, that's me, or that's somebody I know, or that's not me, or I don't know anybody that needs that. The faster people can click through your message and say, it is me or it isn't me, that is a solution, that is a tool, I want to hear more about that, tell me how you do it, let's talk, the more effective you're going to be in using your limited resources to capture customers. Whether that's in the first launch of a product, the first launch of your business, or as your business is established and you want to broaden your target market into a secondary niche or a tertiary niche, as you become successful in one part of your market segment, you can move on to related adjacent market segments to grow your customer base. And that, again, takes knowing who you are, who you serve, what you do, and why your customer needs to buy from you. Another element of business success that really comes down to it is that core message. So many people struggle to articulate who the customer is and what the result is that they get for the customer. And that's because we really don't know, or we get lost in all the possibilities of who we could serve or all the possibilities of what we could do, and we don't want to focus down. We're like a kid in a candy store. We don't know whether to buy the Hershey Kiss or to get the Twix bar. Or we just have too many choices, but we have only $5 in our pocket. We go in that candy store, and how are we going to maximize the use of that $5 to get the candy that we love, like the best, or that we're wanting at that moment? And so we can buy the $5 chocolate bar, or we can buy multiple smaller things that enable us to have a broader market, a more widely diverse option to satisfy our candy craving. And so when we come down to the core message, again, we want to say who we are, we're going to say who our customer is, it's going to say the result that we get for the customer, and we're going to be clearly defined on how we operate to deliver the results that we're promising to the customer. So when we think of our core message, we should think of the customer, we should think about the operations of what it is we do, what we're capable of doing, what we're best at doing, and the best that we're able to serve the customer, and what type of customer that is. And we want to make sure that we understand what results we're promising in such a way that it explains the benefit to the customer. Not necessarily the features of the product, but really the benefit to the customer of having online access versus having limited access based on, you know, access to your computer. It's those kind of things that drive decision making. It's the benefit I'm going to derive, the value I'm going to perceive from the result you're going to get me, that's going to get me to buy your product or your service or to look at a new technology. And so we want to talk about how we execute on our promises. We want to understand the operational aspect of our business and how that can matter to the customer and how it can become a competitive advantage for us as a business. A lot of times we get so excited about our product, about our service, about our technology, we don't want to deal with the overhead aspects of the administration aspects of our business. Those aren't value add because they're not generating revenue. That's not true. Our operational success, our ability to function efficiently and effectively and support the sales aspect of our organization, the delivery of products and services, that billing and collection of payment from our customers is what will keep us in business. You can generate all the sales in the world you want, but if you can't deliver on the promise of what you sold, of you can't deliver the product, the service, the technology, if you can't execute, it's not going to matter how great your sales force is. It's not going to matter how great your product is. You've got the best new mousetrap on the marketplace. You've got the most wonderful technology that's going to compete against Google. Whatever it is you're doing, it won't matter if you can't execute. I've seen so many startups, so many businesses transitioning from old technology to new technology, get so excited about their products and their services that they dropped the ball when it came to actually delivering and servicing and satisfying the promises they made to the customer. And so we can't ever lose focus on that customer and that promise of results that we've made. Another issue that I see with businesses today, I think more seems to be more so than in the past, that they spend so much money acquiring new customers that they forget to reward and to honor and value the existing customer base. I have to say, I think probably cell phone providers, cable TV, internet providers are perhaps some of the best examples in the fact that they have these huge incentive campaigns come in 3 free months of this movie channel, you know, 2 years promising your rates won't go up for 2 years with this plan. And yet when you get in there, you start realizing as a customer that after that 2 years or after that 3 months, not only do your rates go up, it becomes a relationship of when you call in and you ask about things, you're not going to get an incentive. You're not getting anything to stay with the company. Let's say you've been with the company for 20 years with your cell phone. What do they say to you to say thank you for being with our customer for 20 years? Because that's an unusual thing to happen. Same thing, insurance industries, car insurance, homeowners insurance. Do we really show that we value our long-term, long-lasting customers after we've spent so much money to compete and get them in our door? It's our operational aspects. It's our customer service aspects. It's our customer appreciation aspects. It's going to determine whether they become a lifelong customer or whether we're just experiencing a lot of churn and of getting new customers in and losing our customer base, and we get somebody for one time and then they're gone. Another industry that I see this with are home services. Let's say handymen, painters, air conditioning companies, plumbers, those types of home services, even computer repair techs. A lot of times they come in, they put out on the home advisors, on Angie's List, they do all these great campaigns and they give all of these incentives for you to become their customer. And because of how they're operating and how their inability to manage their customer base, to manage their time and optimize getting those new customers, they're always rushing around providing services to new customers that are at deep discounts that they're not making money on a lot of times for those new customers, thinking, well, I'm going to make money on them later. I've got cash flow coming in, but I'm not making as big a profit or any profit on that new customer. But I'm so busy getting in new customers that when my customer that I satisfied that first time wants to come back and be a returning customer, I can't take them because I don't have a slot, or I can't take them because of X, Y, and Z, or I just don't know how to manage a customer base. I worked with an appliance repair company a few years ago, and he had over 7,000 customers in the course of his business. He was paying incentives, all these huge amounts of advertising and referral programs and click-throughs and all these different things he was doing, and he was struggling to make the salary that he needed to support himself and even to grow his business. And he had this vision of becoming this larger business where he wasn't doing the repairs. He had all these people doing it and he was just managing everything. But the problem was when he was spending over 1/3 of his revenue in his company to generate the sales he was generating using advertising, the referral programs, and those kind of things. And when you broke it down, his average customer, 7,000 of them, ended up spending maybe $75 on average with him, and they didn't come back. And why didn't they come back? Well, one would be things that he would say what he didn't do because he didn't want to do it. Not that he wasn't capable of doing it. He didn't like doing it. But I, as a homeowner, if I want my dishwasher replaced and there's some plumbing to do on the side, in addition to having the dishwasher replaced, then I don't want to have two service providers coming in. And he didn't get the concept that sometimes as a business owner, you do things that you're capable of doing as an add-on, as a convenience, as a service to your customer, because that's what they value in reducing the complexity and the number of people and their lost time, those kind of things. But he didn't get calls back. And an understanding in his business why you could have 7,000 new customers and not get called back, and you have for appliance repair, those kind of things, you have a marketplace where $75 a service call was not the normal revenue for his industry. We had to get into his business concept. We had to get into the operational aspect of what does the customer value? What is the benefit that customer is looking for? And change his operations, change his whole perspective on getting customers in and keeping them and getting return customers, that it was after the customer came back, the return customer, when he was doing annual maintenance on appliances, when he was doing things for the customer that made sense for the customer, that the customer valued, that his average revenue per sale was going to increase and he was going to have to spend less dollars getting in new customers because he had a growing customer base that relied on him. And so it's important that we understand operationally what may or may not generate direct revenue supports our ability to generate revenue, whether that's accounting, whether that's our procurement and getting parts in, whether that's a scheduling operations, whether it's our pricing strategy or packages that we offer for services. There are a number of things about how we do business that can make a critical difference in our success rate and our ability to get and keep customers and get them spending more with us over the life of our relationship with them. And so we need to think about the reality that it matters how you deliver that solution, how you operate your business, what the customer expects. You can have an okay idea, a good idea, and a great business model and a great customer service model and have more revenue generated than somebody that has a fabulous, great, innovative technology idea and can't execute. Countless businesses have started with great ideas and have had the wrong operational model. They had the right market, they had great product and technology, and they go out of business because they couldn't operate their business properly to support the customer base, to support the promise of their products and services. And so it's really important that from that first step of choosing your concept, articulating your concept, then the second step of finding the right customer, targeting them with a specific solution that you're capable of delivering that's going to address their problem, that's going to hone you in. You need to understand that customers, no matter who you're selling to, no matter what you're doing, and no matter how truly unique your business or your solution may be, customers will perceive alternatives that you don't as being just like you. And so when we're out there as customers and we're looking for someone, I have an alternative to continue using the solution I have. I have the alternative to do nothing. I have the alternative to do something that wouldn't even conceptually be considered an alternative, possibly from the business selling a product or service to solve my solution. We have things that as a customer, we look at the world through our eyes and we're looking for solutions, benefits, and price that enables us to feel like our problem has been solved, that we've been served appropriately, and that benefit and price, that value we're looking for, works in our mind for what's happening. And I don't know how many times I have personally had great products or great technology, and when I walk into an organization and they drop the ball, I don't want to waste my time. I don't want to spend my money where I'm not valued, whether that's a hairdresser, whether that's a fast food restaurant, whether that's an upscale restaurant, whether it's a taxi service. There are so many things that we interact on a daily basis, and we're all trying to maximize our expenditures to get the most value. We're trying to keep our stress down. We're trying to get so many things done that when a business drops the ball operationally, when they drop the ball on customer service, then I start looking for another business to do business with. And so again, it gets back to what promise are we promising in that fourth element of success, of knowing our core message, of knowing our customer, knowing the opportunity, knowing the result we're going to promise. How are we going to operate? How are we going to execute? How is our business model going to work from the perspective of the customer, and then as from a profitability perspective of the business? We need to think of our operational back office, our sales, the person doing the accounting, someone working on the website. All of those elements support our ability to generate revenue long-term with every customer, and we need to think about the operational aspect of the business is equally as important as the product or solution that we're selling. The reality is, it doesn't matter how great your solution is or how many prospects say, I'm going to buy from you if you can't deliver on the product. You're not going to collect payment if you can't deliver on the product. If the product is of a poor quality or you're late on the delivery, whatever is going on, the operations of the business have to facilitate the relationship with the customer, and whatever you have to do to deliver on the promise, to deliver the product, to keep that result in mind and generate it for the customer will generate more revenues, more sales. Again, countless businesses have great ideas for business. They might even have a great concept for their business model, but when it comes to executing, they drop the ball and consequently they lose the customer. And so let's focus in on that element, that seventh element then of success that all successful business have, is they generate results. They generate results for their customer. They generate results for their business. And those are measurable results. For the customer, you solve the problem, you fill the need, you build their image, you save them time, you save them money, you generate more money. Whatever it is that you're promising, whatever your product, your service, your technology does, keep the promise for the result you said you were going to get for the customer in the timeline you said, how you said you were going to do it. And by keeping that result and generating that result for the customer, you're going to generate the results for your business. And so the business has to stay results oriented. Activities should be generated or generating results. I see a lot of activities in businesses that are not productive. So we want to talk about productivity, and that every activity we have should be focused on serving the customer, supporting the service of the customer, supporting the generation of more prospects, more customers, more business. And three metrics that we look at to know if we're doing that are the revenues, the profits, and the cash flow. And in these financial metrics, we see reflected the ability of the business to get the sale, to deliver the product, to get resources, to control costs, and to actually do business. And those three numbers, financial numbers, when I look at those for a business, when I look at the revenue, when I look at the gross profit, when I look at the net profit, when I look at the ability to convert the sale into cash and have cash on hand to pay the bills, that tells me how healthy the business is on all aspects, from getting the customer, from making the sale, to how we operate, to the incentives we give to the customer, to the delivery of the product or the service. All of these are indicators of the business's ability to do business. Are they the only metrics we're going to have? No, we'll have non-financial metrics. But if I want a quick snapshot of the business, that I can look and into the revenues, I can look into the cost structure of the business to see how the direct costs, those that are a one-to-one relationship of generating the sale or delivering the product, producing the product, and I can understand what's going on with the business. I was talking to an early stage government contracting business. It was a defense contractor probably a decade ago now, and they were redacting a lot of information on what they did and what their products and service was because it had security clearances. But when I looked at their financials, I could look at their financials and understand what industry they're in, what problem they were solving, what solution they were delivering, and I could tell them what was going on in their business, not from the standpoint of what the secured, the confidential information was, or even specifically what the technology was they were delivering, but I could tell where they were struggling because I could see the price of the contracts. I could see how often they were getting paid, which indicated how successful they were operationally in producing the solution that they were delivering. I could see their net profits. I could see their gross profits, so I could understand where they were heavy in the cost structure of their organization, where they were doing certain things that were successful and where they weren't doing things that would help them be more successful, and where they were spending money on things that weren't productive for the organization. And they didn't contribute to them generating revenue or supporting the activities of generating revenue, which included keeping their workforce satisfied and retained with the skill set that was necessary to keep the business moving forward. And so when we have employee retention issues, either through compensation, because of the work atmosphere, the type of work being done, whatever those are, we can see those in the financials too, because your costs go up and your productivity goes down, your ability to produce product and services at a specific profitable cost point changes when you have high turnover rates of your skilled trades, of your skilled intellectual assets of the business. And so if you're developing new technology or you have specialized workforce, even when you're a retailer, if you don't respect the value of your employee interacting with the customer on the floor, you're going to have a harder time generating a profit and competing than if you respect your workforce. And if everything is from a point of doing what's best for the workforce, will be doing what's best for the customers. And that's as simple as scheduling issues in the retailing world. I've seen so many retailers start spiraling down the toilet because, one, they overexpand, two, they treat the workforce as if they're just little interchangeable Legos, and you can move any Lego to any spot that you want and change the rules and expect the structure to work. And understanding that that's not the way it works, that your resources, your operational resources, especially your workforce, will make or break your business. How someone answers the phone, how someone greets a customer in the store, the willingness, the look on their face when they're willing to go the extra mile to help the customer find what they want in the store. Those are the types of things that make or break and get reflected in the financials of the business. So your bottom line is a function of, yes, the sales price you can get in the marketplace for your product, how you can compete, that customer making the purchase, you being able to convince them to make the purchase, that there's value behind it. But it's also about cost control and doing your operations efficiently and effectively and with respect to the workforce. And so when we look at financial metrics, they're going to be our first warning signals that something is wrong in the organization. Back in my corporate life, and it was one of my last corporate jobs, I was operating 7 different facilities, and we were manufacturing some products, and I came in, and things seemed to be all right when I first joined the company, and within a few weeks, I was realizing by looking at the financials, there was something seriously not working in the operational aspects of the business. And the more I dug in, the more I realized, well, we had production equipment issues, and we needed to upgrade, we needed to repair and replace our core manufacturing lines. And having a discussion with the management, they said, well, you know, that's not going to pay back. It's going to affect our profits this year. It would affect our bonuses. And it's like, yeah, but it's going to affect it more next year and the year after that if we don't do it, because we're going to lose customers, because we're going to lose sales. And you can only do that so long, delivering either products late, damaged, poor quality, and keep your customer base. And it's very quickly, within 6 weeks, it was very visible that the manufacturing lines had to be upgraded. We had to do something, because we went from 98% on-time deliveries to our customers of quality product that did not get rejected. And within like a week, it was down to 80%. A few weeks later, we were at like 50% delivery rate. And that's nothing that you can address in the short term, because overhauling manufacturing lines takes time and it takes significant capital investment. And it was delayed way too long, and it impacted our customers. And so when you impact your customer, when you impact their customers and their ability to do business, it creates a downward spiral for your business. So financial metrics can't be saved by cost reduction either. And so I wrote in one article about another corporate job I was at, and one of the first things they did when the costs were starting, starting to have profitability and sales issues, is they cut the coffee service. One, that was like such a minuscule cost to things that wasn't going to save anything. It also sent the wrong signal to the workforce about how they were valued. But the reality was, what needed to be addressed, what needed to be handled in the cost structure, was where costs were being incurred operationally. The wrong things were being ordered. This software wasn't working properly. Staffing and scheduling was off. There were just so many things functionally that were off that they couldn't understand that just starting to cut costs anywhere was not going to change the pattern, because where the major costs were spending, the activities that weren't working, the productivity that wasn't happening, meant that there were not enough costs in the entire operation that if you cut them, that would cover the fact that revenues had dropped significantly because of the ability to produce the product and deliver it to the customer. We had more orders than we can handle, but we weren't generating the right product out of the manufacturing facilities to deliver to those customers, to generate the revenue, to generate the sale, to stay in business. And so it's important to understand our financials and understand what generates them. What does a revenue number reflect? Well, it reflects a quantity and a price at the most basic element. We sold X amount of product at X price, and that's what there. But what went into determining that price? Were there discounts and incentives? How long did it take us to make that sale? What all were the activities that went into getting that customer, to negotiating a price, to getting the contract, to, you know, acquiring all the items it took to produce the product, to deliver it logistically? All of those kind of things are behind that revenue number. What's behind our cost structures? What activities are productive activities that are generating costs that lead to revenue, that support the generation of revenue? And we need to understand the basic equations, and we need to understand the activities and the productivity or lack of productivity behind those activities that get reflected in our financial numbers. And again, the component that interweaves across all of these elements is our ability to execute. I mean, it is critical to understand that the make or break of our business is execution. It is the ability to deliver, the ability to do. So many businesses and nonprofits and government agencies exhibit the unsuccessful characteristics of having an inability to make a decision, an inability to take action, an inability to incorporate feedback into their businesses, into their organizations, to take corrective action. We think, we plan, we do, we get information, we go back to thinking, planning, and doing, and we go back in this cycle. As a business, we have to be able to make adjustments, to take corrective action, to look at the plan we had that came out of the concept, to the customers that we were targeting. All of those elements have to be constantly tweaked, to be monitored through our financials, through all of these different things, to understand that how we work with clients, how we acquire workforce and other assets, how we put the business model together determines whether our organization executes effectively and efficiently and at a profit. And that's true of nonprofits too. And I mean, you say nonprofit. Well, nonprofit doesn't mean you don't make money. You want to be a profitable nonprofit, generating revenues, donations, underwriting, whatever that is. And you want those revenues to exceed your expenses, because that means you get to grow the organization again. Nonprofit simply means you're not owned by stockholders. From it's an ownership thing, not a profitability thing. And that's true, I'm going to say, of governments too, although I don't know one single government that thinks of itself in the terms of our costs have to be below our revenues. Our government certainly doesn't. And as long as somebody has a blank checkbook and is willing to keep underwriting your activities without profit, without being able to be self-sustaining, then you keep bad behaviors going. But when we are a small business, a large business, a nonprofit that has to stay in existence by the revenues, by the funding, by the activities we generate and the costs we control, then we have to understand that our stewardship role, our accountability for our activities, for our vision, for our ability to execute in the business rests in making decisions, watching how those decisions are executed, making sure they're executed properly, learning from the success or failure, tweaking the message, finding another customer, changing how we do business in subtle ways, in drastic ways, in response to new information. If you can't execute, you can't succeed. And one example I want to use right now is of four nonprofits I've been working with past, I'm going to say year and a half, different stages. One's been around for almost 15 years, and they are constantly in the red operationally, and I hear from them, oh, we're a nonprofit, no, we don't want this, or we don't want to do that, we're all volunteers, whatever. they're struggling to stay in existence. Arguably, they're mismanaging their limited critical resources because of their perspective on what a nonprofit is. They don't change any behaviors. They don't change how they attempt to get new donors and underwriters. They do activities that are not productive. And so their resources are constantly strained, constantly running short, and they're constantly wasting time going for small dollar donations when they could spend just as much time going for larger donations that would be sustaining their organization and their mission for that organization. They need to revamp their concept. They need to revamp their business model. They need to take a new perspective on what it means to be a nonprofit. The other two organizations, one started, I'm going to say, roughly in October and is a local chapter of a national nonprofit. And the concept was there. Different things were there. The demand was there for the product, for serving the market base that they were going to serve. There were two problems on this. They were operationally off, and they were off on execution because the national aspect of it has not modernized their operations, their marketing, their strategy, their concept on how things are done, even their email systems, or, you know, moving to something that's a newsletter-driven from a system, whether it be a free or paid software, to manage newsletters, to manage membership information, to manage donors and advertisers and all those kind of things. And then at the new chapter level, they just weren't executing. And whether that's the mix of talent, whether that's personalities, whether it's a lack of resources, whether it's a lack of expertise or experience, it translated to you've got demand, you've got a customer, you've got a message, you're lacking the proper operations, and you have an inability to execute even within the operational structures that exist. Now, in contrast, the other two nonprofits we're working with are hitting it, you know, home runs practically every day and every time. So one started this year, roughly March, April timeframe, already has new donors, has serving their customers, having multiple events, listens to every bit of feedback, manages relationships, adapts the business model, you know, looks at the financials, is constantly aware that the plan for the business the nonprofit has to adapt as we get new information, as we interact with the client base, as we interact with funders. It's just a night and day thing because they're confident in their specific skill sets and abilities, and they're willing to hire and invest in the best people to come in and help them with their mission. And they are really fantastic at adapting, modifying how they articulate the concept for the organization, how they share information, the willingness to invest in technology, to modernize and have a business model within the nonprofit that enables them to successfully serve their client base and to bring the community in as funders, as advisors. I mean, it's just night and day. If I contrast them between the organization that's been around 15 years or even the one that's been around almost a year, the amount of the ability to execute, the amount of people they've already served with minimal amount of investment is just night and day. And it comes down to being willing to think, to plan, to do, to get new information, to adjust your plan by thinking a little bit more. What does this information tell us? What do we need to do differently? What do we do next? What are our priorities? And focusing on that. And that gets down again to a key element of effectively starting and running a business. Successful businesses always have a plan. They have a business model that they have thought through, that they have connected the financial metrics to, they've quantified, they've identified, and they look at that plan not as something to be put on the shelf and collect dust or in a drawer that they run across every 10 years or as a, you know, an annual exercise that's futile. They just do it because it's supposed to be done. No, that plan becomes a living, breathing document that says, we thought this, we learned this, we changed that. What were the differences? How does that ripple through to our financials? know, we said we were going to raise this much money from this group. It turns out it's going to look more like this. What does that mean operationally? What kind of workforce and team can we support? What do we have to change? It's constantly taking in new information and adapting your organization to that new information. A new competitor comes in. There's some kind of bad behavior. You lose a sponsor. Whatever it is, they have that plan of what was. They know what is. They make adjustments. They revise the plan. They see how that new information, the actual results, impact their ability to execute on other parts of the plan. They think, they plan, they do, they adapt. And that's a characteristic of successful organizations. They have a plan, they have a business model, and they have the ability to learn, to adapt, to revise, to plan again, to act again, and they don't get caught up in analysis paralysis looking for perfect information. But they get the information as it comes in from the results, from the activities they're engaging in. They know when timing slips, they know when something happens, and they are capable of incorporating that into their next step and doing so quickly. And so it will make a night and day difference to your organization for you to have a business plan, to know what activities you're focused on that are productivity activities, and how you're going to assign your resources in there. And walking through a business model and a financial model using a spreadsheet, I don't care if you use a piece of paper and a pen, you use a napkin in a restaurant. As long as you're writing down your ideas and your concept and you take time to think about what happened today, what happened this week that I need to adapt and change my plan based on this new information. Successful organizations are learning organizations. They are adaptable organizations. They are able to evolve into something new based on new information. They are willing to listen to feedback on their mistakes and on their successes and learn to do more of what worked and less of what didn't work. And so having your business plan, having it as a living, breathing line in the sand, something to compare performance to say, is this what we expected? And if it's not, what was different and what do we need to change to get back on track to our performance? Heck, you may be outperforming your business plan, and that may mean that you weren't ambitious enough with that plan, or you've done something different from that plan that you didn't expect to work as well, and now you need to do more of that, and you may need to change your resources around. You may need to go out and get more resources and look to investors or loans or any other sources of funding. Your financial metric help you quantify and identify the productivity of your organization or the lack of productivity in your organization. That plan, that forecast, that vision for your business that you can put down on a piece of paper, that you can put into an Excel spreadsheet, that gives you direction. That gives you a metric. That gives you a line of comparison to what you thought was going to happen versus what did happen and where are the variances. What's made the difference in your organization? And successful organizations, large and small, know their plan. And I've heard people say, oh, I didn't have a plan. You know, some of the most successful businesses, it's like, we didn't have a business plan. We just went out and did this. And then a little bit later, they'll be saying, well, now, I knew at the end of the month that when I had X dollars in the bank, we would do this. But if we didn't have that, we would do X. And we had these decision factors. They had a plan. They may not have had a written plan, but they had a plan on how they were going to act based on real-time financial feedback of what was going on in their organization. If they had, let's say, $5,000 in the bank, they would do X. If they had $4,000 in the bank, they would do Y. And if they had $20,000 in the bank, they would do A. They had a plan. Is it necessary for it to be written down? I advise my clients to write it down because it gives them, again, a look back at what you thought was going to happen and something to think about. What was different than what we planned and what do we need to do differently to still achieve the financial results or even better financial results if we're hitting it out of the park. Every successful business has these 10 elements, and let's just articulate them right now. They have that clear concept of who they are, what they do, who they do it for, what result they generate, how they generate it, and they are, secondly, an expert in market knowledge, in their problem that they solve, in the size of their market opportunity, in who they're competing against, in the customer's behavior, that when you talked about to them about their business, about economic impacts on their business, about how access to capital has impacted them, or what trends in advertising, or how social media works for their organization, or where their customers get the information, they are the expert. There is no one smarter in the room about their business, their customer, their competition, their industry, their market segments than they are. They are experts in every aspect of their business. They know with specificity who their customer is and everything there is to know about that customer. How old they are, how they buy, how they prefer to get their information, what other products they buy. They know demographics, they know psychographics, they know what influences them. They know about their image issues. They know about whatever it is that matters to the customer that influences their ability to buy. Whether that's discretionary income, that's whether that's their average income, it's whatever economics are going on, economic uncertainty, age of their children, demands on their income, all of those kind of things. They understand their specific customer. They also understand that market niche and how the solution works for them. So within that entire possible realm of the world of customers, they know where their customer is, what niche they set in, and what other things they buy, what other problems that they experience. And they want to know that because they want to know how they may get additional customers that are like the customer they currently serve, the adjacent customers, or they want to know where the opportunity is for the next product, service, or technology, or a new way to use the current product, service, or technology that their customer, their market segment, may not be aware of. Successful businesses have a core message of customer, of operations, of results they generate, and their ability to execute, and they are focused on that. And that is what they're in business to do. They also, behind that O in that core message is that operations. They are well designed. They have systems and processes. They wisely invest in things that enable them to serve the customer, to communicate with the customer, to hear from the customer, to bill the customer, to collect the money, to support the people in production, in the HR aspects, in the accounting aspects, the customer service aspects of the business. When they go to invest money in operations, they do it at the bottleneck. They do it somewhere where there's going to create capacity. They do it also at a point where they know their most productive assets have to be. Remember that manufacturing line at the company I was talking about that struggled? It had been years since they had done anything to the equipment. They hadn't modernized it. They hadn't updated it. They really hadn't overhauled or serviced it to the point that it needed to be. A successful business, one with long-term vision, will make a short-term profitability reduction in order to keep the productive capacity of the organization in place and firing on all cylinders. That's an investment, not an expense. And the successful operational businesses that treat their operations as a competitive advantage keep their machines well-oiled, well-serviced, and focused on being at maximum productivity as they're needed. And so they are focused, the seventh element, they're focused on results. Results matter. And they keep an eye on their goals, on their performance, on their financial metrics, on every aspect of executing the business effectively and efficiently. They have a business model. They learn, they adapt that business model based on performance and based on markets. And they look at their financials planned and actual and understand what's happened, what worked, and what hasn't worked, and what their next steps are. They learn, they grow, they adapt, they plan, they act, they do, they succeed. And that's today's program. I'm Lee Strickland. This is Focus on Business. And until next time, everyone, stay focused on the important things. You're listening to WCOM-FM, LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 on the dial, and live streaming from WCOMFM.org.
WCOM-FM 103.5 Chapel Hill and Carrboro and Focus on Business would like to thank our underwriters, Focus Resources. Their website is focusresourcesinc.com.
You're listening to WCOM-FM, LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 on the dial, and live streaming from WCOMFM.org.